You are listening to the Alouettes Flight Deck, a proud member of the Canadian Football Podcast Network.
All right, folks, we've been cleared for takeoff.
And welcome to Alouettes Flight Deck, podcast dedicated to Montreal Alouettes football. I am Tim Capper, along with Cliffy D. Hey, it's the playoffs, bud.
Playoffs? Don't talk to me about playoffs. You kidding me? Yes, you know, we can talk about playoffs. Because, yes, the Montreal Alouettes are in the playoffs for the Grey Cup. That's and, right. Oh, man, I am excited. I am very, very excited about this.
I am, too. I mean, with the numbers that the Alouettes keep sending out about how many tickets have been sold and whatnot. And we have a little bit of breaking news, which we'll talk about here in a couple of minutes. But it's going to be fun, dude. It's going to be fun. Not your normal episode of the Alouettes Flight Deck. We're happy to be able to have gotten President and CEO of the Owls, Patrick Boivin, and also wide receiver Devere Posey. It's a 2-for-1 this week. We'll be playing each of those interviews coming up. But, you know, it's funny. You talk about, you know, the game last week. You know, we talk about, were we going to talk about this game or not, you know, win or lose? And it was like, well, don't really have to. But at least the main thing that we have to say, at least here, Cliff, is that even though it was the Ottawa Redblacks and we understand what type of season that they're going through, and the players that did basically come out early, the Alouettes put on a great show, and I was actually very happy of how they were able to play, even though they technically were playing with, I guess we could say, with a little bit of somewhat adversity throughout the game.
Yeah. Again, this was a tough game. It's a tough game to get excited for, but obviously a couple of the players did have some personal goals that they wanted to reach, and they were able to do so, most notably Vernon Adams, who made it very clear he wanted to play and he wanted to win this game, not only just to get his 10th victory of the season, but he was also on the cusp of breaking the 4,000 passing yard plateau for 2019. So this game meant something to him, and it meant something to a lot of the players, especially the ones that had been given the week off previously, and they wanted to get that final tune-up in for before the playoff game. So that game, like, to say this was a meaningless game, it was meaningless in the sense that it affected nothing in the standings. It affected nothing for the Red Blacks. It affected nothing for the Alouettes. It really was more about pride than anything else. And that's kind of the mindset the players went into, is they wanted to finish the regular season strong. They wanted to send a message that say that, you know, they are very much in contention for a playoff spot. They want to be a part of the Grey Cup conversation. And I dare say that they did that. I mean, the score itself, 42-32 in favor of the Alouettes, it doesn't really scream a dominant victory, and especially with the amount of scoring that went on in the fourth quarter alone. I mean, this game almost got away from the Alouettes too. I mean, that's the funny part. Like, they still want to be the cardiac kids, and just once, I'd like this team to just curb a stomp an opponent. But I guess that's just not going to happen in 2019. I mean, I guess we'll see how the playoffs go. But I mean, this team always just wants to make things fun and interesting and keep people watching. And sure enough, that's just what they do. And at the end of the day, they got the victory. They got 10 wins. Like, we can officially say, Tim, that this is a winning football team.
Yep, for the first time since 2010, the Alouettes have a winning record.
And I tell you what, it's a great feeling. And even
Excuse me, 2012.
Yeah, I was gonna say, 2012. You're right. So for this team to be able to say that they are a winning football team with a positive record, it's something that, again, it's been 7 years since we've been able to say this about the Montreal Alouettes, and let me tell you, Tim, it's a great feeling. And I can tell, too, that the players, they were excited. They were jacked about getting to that mark, and now comes the really fun part. Now these games count. Like, and Kahari Jones, he talked about it in his post-game his post-game speech to the players. Like, now a three-game season starts.
Yep.
He's absolutely right. Like, now, whatever happened in the past doesn't matter. As far as everybody's concerned, the Alouettes are 0-0. Yeah. Now you got to get to 3-0.
That's right. That's right. Also, another two where we're talking about milestones. The Alouettes are able to stay away from a particular milestone. The Alouettes were able to get a defensive touchdown. It was only their first defensive touchdown. They got it with like less than a minute to go on the clock. But they were able to get – they weren't able to tie the 1970 Alouettes, who didn't have a single defensive touchdown that year. But it was good for them to get one and heading into the playoffs and showing that, hey, guys, you can't actually score on defense.
Yep. And credit to Najee Murray. I mean, the funny thing about it was, like, the Alouettes were technically up by three. Ottawa had, you know, momentum on their side. They're feeling good. They felt like they were going to make the comeback and send our nation home happy. And then Will Arndt, you know, he throws his pass. It was a tip drill right into the arms of Najee Murray. And that's probably the easiest touchdown he's ever going to score in his life. And his first CFL touchdown, let me remind you. And talk about putting the icing on the cake. Like, that was just the way to do it. Like, that, if you're going to win your 10th game of the year in that fashion, wow, that was unbelievable. Like, that just did it. As far as I was concerned, like, yep, that's it. This is officially a winning season for the Montreal Alouettes. And it was just like the exclamation point right there. And as you said, the first defensive touchdown of 2019, it's a hell of a way to do it. But hey, that's all that matters, is just you get that pick six, you basically seal the game for you, and now it's playoff time.
Exactly. We'll talk about the playoffs here in a couple of minutes, but we're able to get the Alouettes president and CEO Patrick Boisvin on with us to talk about the team. So what we're going to do is let's get the interview up and running, and when we get back, we'll talk about it a little bit more. And on the line with us now is the president and CEO of the playoff-bound Montreal Alouettes, Mr. Patrick Boisvin. Hey, Patrick, thanks for joining us.
Hey, guys. Cliff, Tim, good to see you guys. Good to talk to you guys.
Good, same here. So how does that feel, Patrick, by the way? It's the first time since you've been with the team that you can actually say the playoff-bound Montreal Alouettes. How does it make you feel? How does it the organization feel to be able to say that now for the first time in quite a few years?
Yeah, well, you know who said it best was Kahari. I think it was right after the last game of the season in the locker room. He was talking to the guys on how proud he was, probably the way they executed in that game, which was, you know, tough in a lot of cases. You know, we were sitting a lot of guys, and ultimately, you know, playoffs have been clinched and not much was going to change in the standings, but the fact that we still managed to win and finished at 10-8 and over 500, but fundamentally, you know, he told him he was really proud of them. And I know for a fact it was for that game, but it was for the season in general. And he was looking ahead at, you know, the opportunity that we had to be back in the playoffs for the first time in 5 years. And for me, you know, that just echoed, I think, how I felt, but certainly how the whole organization feels. You know, the work that we've done in the last, you know, year and a half, 2 years, if not a little bit more than that, of trying to right this ship and trying to bring things back, you know, online and certainly where our fans, you know, deserve this to be. I think it's a real sense of pride.
I can only imagine. I'm sure Cliff and I, we feel the exact same way, obviously, with us been following the team for such a long time. We'll have to ask a little bit about the playoffs, because I know the team has been promoting this quite a bit on social media, you know, with the big milestones of selling 10,000 seats at one point before they actually went on sale to the general public. And now, if I'm not mistaken, please correct me if I'm wrong, Patrick, are we up to 16,000 officially, or is it actually higher than that now for the game on Sunday?
No, I'm pretty sure we put out only 2,000 tickets left today.
Okay.
And I would venture to say pretty safely that so we should be heading confidently into a 20,000, if you can call that a sellout, considering that was a stadium that we had this year. But there's a very, very strong chance that, you know, tomorrow, if not Thursday, or sorry, Friday, will bring, you know, maybe another announcement, maybe ripping off of A or some tarps. I think we're trending right now in a good direction. I don't want to get ahead of myself, but right, we're trending in a good direction where we'll certainly see 20, and hopefully, and depending on how the final sales for today went and then into tomorrow, hopefully we can take some of those off and be back to certainly where we once was. But the response from Montreal, from the fan base, has been tremendous, and certainly want to keep encouraging people that, you know, don't know if they want to go yet to just pick one up, just pick up a ticket, come and be part of this, you know, just like everyone who's been part of some of those really exciting games that we've had at Percival Molson this season.
For sure. And hearing that there is the possibility that what seems to be a better than 50% chance of removing at least one tarp, that is absolutely amazing. It's a hell of a way for the team to be trending. So I'm very proud to hear that. Cliff.
All right. Let's talk a little bit about the actual product itself on the field. I mean, 10-8 season is definitely far beyond, I'd say, a lot of people's expectations. How this team has performed on the field and how the coaching staff and everything very much as far as football operations itself goes, looks to be running behind the scenes. Are you guys meeting the goals you guys had for the start of the season, or have you exceeded them, or do you still feel there's a little work to be done?
No, I think everyone agrees that as proud as we are of what we've accomplished in, you know, certainly unusual and challenging circumstances, there's still work to be done. That goes without saying. Now, as far as expectation and whether we achieve those expectations or not, I think at this point, once you're in the playoffs, your expectations have to shift, and they have to be focused on getting till the end. For me to kind of restate what expectations were 6 months ago versus what they are now, right now, the only expectation is that we're in Calgary. We really believe that, you know, we get out of next Sunday. I think there's probably a Grey Cup champion to be played in Hamilton, and knowing the quality of the team that they have. And if we were lucky enough to get there and get a crack at them, you know, I'm pretty sure we'll get a good shot at them. And then, you know, who knows what can happen in one game. So expectations are Calgary. But if I had to kind of look at the season overall, I'd say making the playoffs was an expectation and always should be an expectation. But I think the way that we've done that and the way that we've turned a corner and you know, managed to get people, starting with the players and the coaches, but certainly the fans, the way that we've gotten people to believe again, I think that is, you know, right on par with where we knew that we needed to be. And I guess those were our expectations.
When you look at what's your thoughts on the team itself, considering how the team started off at the beginning of the regular season and how it's ending up now, how's your thought on how the team actually progressed from obviously from when we had a coaching change at the beginning of the season up until now?
Well, look, the team, when you look at our roster, the team certainly, you know, we made some adjustments along the way, whether it was, you know, when we made changes in the leadership. But even after that, as the season goes along, which is just normal, the team is you know, a lot of pieces are what we've built out over the last 2 years. I think the key was how you brought this team together, and the gel through that is in large part, you know, Coach Jones and his coaching staff and the way that they all believed in you know what they were getting into, but that they all believed in. And what they thought they could accomplish through that too. So as unusual as it was, I think it's a testament to the type of individuals, you know, on the coaching staff, but you know, Joe Max stepping in and you know, not an easy position either. And Eric Deloria coming in and pinch hitting for us as well. I think it's a testament to a lot of the character traits, that we thought initially, you know, define this team in a lot of ways, and these guys, you know, unbeknownst to them, just kind of brought that to life. So,
right.
I think it's really great.
Now, obviously, we know that everything. We still got three more games to go, and obviously, the goal is to go 3-0. But we have to at least ask the question, Patrick, considering the current state of head coaches in the CFL and how many spots have become available. How important is it for this Montreal Alouettes team to negotiate and make sure that we get Kahari on board for a long-term contract for 2020 and beyond?
Yeah, look, I stated this, and maybe to a lesser degree, but you know, Kahari is a material piece to the success that we've had this year. And you know, in both my case and in his case, there's a real willingness to continue on this adventure that, in my mind, is only starting this year. So, you know, he loves what he did this season, and he would love nothing more than to continue. And, you know, we have the same intent. Now, all that being said, you know, we have a football game on Sunday.
That's right.
And, you know, we don't want these kind of things to distract. So there's a time and place to make sure that all that gets done. But, you know, I think both sides agree that we're on to something pretty special here. And if we can make it work and continue, then that's, you know, for sure what we want to do.
Fantastic.
I guess, Patrick, a big question is, as far as you know, we've got almost 20,000 seats sold. If there are people that are on the fence right now looking to, you know, they're waiting maybe to see what the weather's like or what have you as far as attending the Sunday's game goes, what's the one thing you would say to them to really convince them to say, okay, I'm in, I want to be at the game Sunday, here's my money, give me a ticket?
Well, it depends where you're coming from, but I'll tell you what, if you were an Alouettes fan, you know, 10 years ago and you knew exactly what you were getting every time you stepped in the stadium, you know, I believe we're getting back into that now. And the atmosphere at the stadium, for those that have lived it, especially the Winnipeg and the Calgary game, is second to none, certainly compared to anything that I think that we've seen in the last 4, 5, 6 years. But it's also new and it's different. And the guys, players, but even fans alike in media, people that have lived through, especially those two games, will describe it as, you know, something that they've rarely, if not sometimes even never, seen before. And maybe it's a generational thing. Maybe it is everything that we've done outside of football to begin attracting a new fan base that's actually coming together. Because there's a vibe and there's a hype that's there that where you get, you know, our longtime season ticket holders and longtime fans that are coming back and that enjoy the game in the way that they've enjoyed it maybe for 10, 20, you know, 30 years. And then you have a number of new fans that are just coming in and see the football game for the event and the real happening that it can be. And they are thoroughly enjoying themselves. And it's become a party and it's become a great place. And truthfully, the crowd is what makes the stadium. And people have taken ownership of, you know, being behind the team. And people have a real knowledge of football in Montreal. So, you know, you know when the other team's offense is on. And you know when our offense is on. And people have a tendency of kind of controlling the pulse of this whole vibe and this environment for the game, and just being part of that in the stands is unique. Now, on top of that, you know, you're going to have the first full house of the season. Just that in itself is a pretty exciting thing. You know, first of all, Molson Stadium is unique for those that have never been there. If there's one time that you want to be able to visit, it's certainly a playoff game with the Alouettes. We're going to have pretty new and certainly much bigger tailgate for those that are interested in, you know, getting up there a little bit early. We've got a big push and a big help from Labatt coming in, but we're actually going to be able to sell some food and sell some beer outside at the tailgate. So it's actually going to become a real tailgate now, as opposed to, you know, so some of the more restricted ways that we had to do it in the past. So that's going to be a big thing. Lots of door prizes too. You know, rally bandanas for people coming in, probably for the majority of the crowd. Some incentives, some gifts also, namely from BMO that's leading the charge for, I think, the first 3,000 people coming in. So a lot of goodies, a lot of fun. And you know what? The weather, that's just the CFL. So if you want to understand what the CFL is like, it means a 40-degree game in the middle of July, and it means a 0-degree with maybe some snow in November. And look, if you want to console yourself or you want to, you know, look at things in a little bit of different light, look at what the weather's going to be in Calgary this weekend.
Yeah.
And you tell me where you would rather be to kind of watch a playoff game. Yeah. It'd probably be Montreal, because I think they're calling for minus 20 in Calgary.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
I agree with you. And I was trying to remember, too, because, you know, with the possible forecast of snow, I don't think in the years that they've been playing at Percival Molson, I can't remember a single game where we've actually had the possibility of playing with snow. So it may be a first in quite a long time for Alouettes fans.
No, and there you go. And just that in itself, I think, is very, yeah, you know, it's very unique to the CFL. I mean, Green Bay would argue a little bit differently that, you know, they certainly play in snow and frozen fields and things like that. But that's the CFL experience. I mean, our season, you know, straddles summer and into the fall and early winter. And, you know, that's just the way it is. And if, you know, just dress appropriately, that's all. Come in and have some fun. You know, the atmosphere will warm up anyone. And if not, then the beer will. So come in and come enjoy yourself.
Exactly. I mean, it's been a season from a rebranding to everything, and from all the games this season, the atmosphere has been absolutely stunning. And then players still to this day, Patrick, and I'm sure yourself too, have heard fans talk about the lightning bugs coming out, so to speak, in the game versus the Stampeders. The atmosphere is, I don't want to say it's changed at Percival Molson, but it's gotten actually a lot better. And obviously having a winning team has made, you know, everything better. So if anybody who wants to get those tickets that Cliff is talking about, how would they contact the Alouettes to get them?
Best thing is MontrealAlouettes.com. That's where you'll see exactly what's available, you know, whenever you are going on. And in the event that we do release tickets, you know, stay tuned, because there's probably going to be some interesting tickets and interesting price points, you know, regardless of what your, you know, spending capacity is,
right,
that are going to be coming out. And that's the best spot. You know, the website is very precise, and you can get a 360 view of what your seat's going to look like. So that's the best and easiest thing to do.
Fantastic.
MontrealAlouettes.com.
There we go.
You heard it there. You heard it here first, folks. Yeah.
Greatly appreciate your time, Patrick. We know you have a busy evening, and again, we hope to have you on the show very shortly. And we greatly appreciate your time.
Hey, appreciate it, guys. Keep up the great work, and looking forward to enjoying the game with you guys on Sunday.
Thanks again, obviously, for Patrick for joining us, and we know he had a busy evening. And what we mentioned before the actual interview itself, that there was a little bit more of breaking information. I know that Patrick was talking about the amount of people that they were hoping to get in stadium, getting close to sell out. The Alouettes have actually sent out a newsletter and some news to fans who are subscribed to it, that they are actually going to have available an extra 1,600 tickets, additional tickets available at Percival Molson for the game itself. So it looks like at least one tarp, Cliff, at least one will be removed, and we actually may have, if everything goes according to plan, we're going to have over 20,000 screaming fans this Sunday versus the Edmonton Eskimos.
Absolutely. And the fact that they've released this section tells me that, yes, we are pretty much guaranteed at the very least 20,000 of those screaming fans. Now, to me, that's great. That's an amazing accomplishment. But you know what? We can do better. So I want everyone that's listening to this podcast, if you don't have your tickets already, get on board. And no excuses, because the seats that have just been released are $39 a piece. $39 for a playoff football game, folks. And you know it's going to be electric. If you've been to Percival Molson Stadium this year, you know just how loud, how crazy it can get. And that's even with like a less than full stadium. Now you're going to have all that noise amplified, and you could be a part of that. And folks, what I really want to see, though, is even more sections open. I want more tarps coming off. I don't want just one section being opened up and like, okay, here, more. No. I want more. I want this state. I want them to have to be forced to take all of the tarps off of those closed off sections and sell more tickets. I want that 25,000, quite frankly.
Oh, that'd be cool.
And let's face it, I know a lot of folks are probably on the fence. They're not sure if they're going to want to go to the game or not. Maybe because the weather, like there might be snow in the forecast. It might be a little cold. So what?
Yeah, so what?
Get your ass into the stadium, folks. If you don't have your tickets, my God. First of all, shame on you for waiting so long and waffling and, you know, hemming and hawing about whether you should go to the game or not. Go to the game. That's the message. Go to the game. It's Sunday. This is the last football game of 2019 here in Montreal, folks. After that, you go to Hamilton and you go to Calgary. This is your last chance to see football live here in Montreal. So I want to see those extra seats sold. That's all there is to it. Like, don't wait till game day, folks. Don't take the chance that they might get scared and decide not to open up more sections. Don't take that chance. Go there. Get your tickets. Go to the website, like Patrick said. Buy them up. That's all there is to it. $39 is not that expensive for playoff football, people. And it is going to be lit. It is going to be an amazing atmosphere. And this football team is going to be ready to play. It is going to be off the chain, as the kids say.
Oh my God.
Buy your tickets.
Oh, Cliff, you're killing me, dude. You're killing me, but I love it anyways. I love it anyways.
Hey, hype man's gonna hype.
Hype man's gonna hype. I'm trying to find out the sections that they have opened up because I've gone onto the website to see if I can try to distinguish what they've opened up. I think because it's multiple sections in the upper deck. It was X2. Was X2 closed?
No.
X2 was open.
Yeah, I think it was Q2 and R2 that were closed, that were tarped off.
And on the other side?
The other side would be, I want to say L or M and M. M and N, I should say. Not M and M. Although it'd be cool if M and M came to the game. What? It's not so weird.
And C2, actually. Was it C2? Anyways.
Yeah, C2 is also closed, tarped off.
It looks, maybe it may have been opened up here. I'm trying to look to see what it is, because I know that the seats are currently... are $39. So hey, yeah, head over to montrealowets.com and get your seats if you don't have them already. Be a part of the party. The other thing that the Alouettes mentioned too is that obviously with the boutique being open Thursdays and Fridays, the Alouettes have announced that there is going to be a 50% off sale on jerseys. Oh my god, dude. I'm smacking myself. I mean, but still. but yeah, on Thursday only at the boutique, there will be the jerseys will be 50% off, along with some of the Alouette players that are going to be that are going to be there from 6 to 8. So if you haven't gotten your jersey already, what a good time to come down to the boutique and pick that up. I mean, dude, it's 50% off.
50%, man. That's good. That's great. And also get a chance to meet some of your boys before they play their playoff game. Let's see. As of right now, it's Eugene Lewis, Hinock Mwamba, and Bo Lucombo are going to be there. So what a great how great is that? Go get yourself a new jersey. Be ready for Sunday. You're paying 50%, and you get to meet some of the boys before they take the field. Damn. I mean, what more do you want, folks?
Exactly.
If you've been waiting to get your jersey, you don't know who you want on there, you can't go wrong with any of those guys. Or I'm sure there's going to be a whole bunch of jerseys ready to go of some of your other favorite players. This is the time, folks. Be ready. Be playoff ready.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. And as we know, the jerseys can go over your jackets anyway. So get ready for the playoffs. All right. Before we get to the interview with Devere Posey, which is we want to thank you, Sam. It was what we're going to try to do is we're going to give most of the interview here on the pod tonight. It was quite a longer interview than we've done before, but if necessary, we're going to go ahead and we'll break it up, and the full interview will be available over at www.alouettesflightdeck.ca, along with the other shows that are currently in the can in the archive. But before we get to that, I want to mention, Cliff, that the game so far versus Edmonton, the line itself now, according to Five Dimes, is now down to a 1.5 point favorite for the Alouettes. It's basically jumped anywhere from 3 down to the current 1.5 with an over under of 50 points. It's playoff football, man. I mean, I don't know what else to expect.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of think that line's a little disrespectful towards the Alouettes, but I guess they're banking on the fact that, you know, Trevor Harris will be playing for the Eskimos, and a lot of their starters that weren't playing against Saskatchewan the week before, they'll be back on. So, but to me, like, I just think, like, Edmonton's going to be a very tough test for the Alouettes, but let's not forget, Edmonton's coming to our house. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be a very volatile environment. It is going to be loud. It is going to be crazy. And this Alouettes team, all of their starters are going to be playing, and they're going to be ready to go.
Right.
And I'm not going to say this is going to be a cakewalk for the Alouettes. Don't get me wrong. But I mean, Edmonton is definitely, they've got a tough road to hoe. And I just think that line's a little disrespectful towards the Alouettes. But you know what? It is what it is. I hope they, I don't know if they need bulletin board material, but I mean, if I was a player and I was thinking that we're only favored by 1.5, no, we got something to prove now. if they didn't have anything to prove before, they now have got something to prove.
Exactly. And with the Edmonton coming to town, this will be the first time that the Alouettes have played Edmonton in the playoffs. It will be the fourth crossover game that the Alouettes have played since returning in 96 and since the crossover started in the early 2000s. And the Alouettes are currently, they have won all three of those games in those crossover games in the Eastern semifinals. But yeah, it should be a good game itself. And as we said, Vernon Adams will be playing the entire game. Oliver Ones will be playing. And it should be a great atmosphere. Hey, Sunday football's back in Montreal for the first time since last year.
Mm-hmm. And again, it matters. It counts right now. That's like right. This is it, folks. I mean, like there's no tomorrow for this game. It's win or, in this case for Montreal, stay home.
Yeah.
But again, I just the buzz around the city right now for this team is like nothing else, and it's just getting bigger. And it's just I'm just so looking forward to Sunday to see just how it all comes to a head. It is going to be a very electric atmosphere. I'm fairly confident in saying that this is going to be a football game that nobody in the city of Montreal is going to forget.
No, I hope not. I hope not. We're going to go ahead and get to our interview with Devier Posey. Such a great interview with this guy. I mean, we were able to go through everything from his career in the NFL, college, what he thinks about the horseshoe. And people are like, what are you talking about? If you know college football, you'll know what we're talking about once we get to that point in the interview. But we'll get to that interview now, and we'll come back to finish up the show. And on the line with us now is an integral part of the Montreal Alouettes offense. He is trying to lead help lead the Montreal Alouettes to a Grey Cup berth. But first, we got to get through the Edmonton Eskimos this Sunday. On the line with us now is wide receiver Devier Posey. Hey, Devier, thanks for joining us.
Hey, how you guys doing? Thanks for having me, Cliff and Tim.
Well, you know, usually what we try to find out about your history of yourself through football and stuff like that. But first, we have to at least ask. I mean, we know you are a vet itself of the playoffs itself. We know you've been to the Grey Cup. What's the overall feeling of the team heading back into the playoffs, especially for Montreal too, into the playoffs for the first time in quite a few years?
Oh, you know, the city's exciting. I think, you know, there's a buzz about the team and a buzz about the year we had. And you know, I mean, Kari mentioned it today, you know, it was a successful year, you know, no matter what happens in the playoffs, you know, we, you know, you can't take away the year we had and the games we played. But, you know, just knowing the guys and, you know, and the reason why this season was successful is because of who we are and how we played those games and in the fashion in which we won and how every team in the CFL knows, you know, when you play us, you know, it's going to be a game and it's going to be a dogfight, you know, no matter who's on the field. And that's the vibe I'm getting from this team. You know, this week, you know, we're ready, we're loose, you know, we're being who we are and we're excited to go put on a show for our fans. You know, I always wonder, you know, in the playoffs, you know, how normal can you make it? You know, how normal of a week can it be? Can you stay in your routine? Can you do the small things? Can you do like the things that you need to do to take care of your body like you normally would? But, you know, with the playoffs, you got extra interviews, you got extra appearances, family in town, you know, different things like that, different things to do. So I think that's the challenge for us. And we're all aware of that. And we're staying on top of what we need to do.
And obviously, you were one of the big free agent signings this year for the Alouettes. And you come into Montreal, and then we all saw what happened at the beginning of the season. You as a first time player in Montreal, have you ever lived through something like that before, whether it be in any professional football or your college career, where there was such a major change to the staff right before the beginning of the season?
No, nothing that dramatic, you know, prior to the start of the season. But I've been on teams my second year with the Houston Texans. They relieved Gary Kubiak of his duties mid-season, and Wade Phillips took over. So that's one thing about professional football that's inevitable is change. And I think a good thing that's always a positive is when you're able to, you know, stand the test of time and be able to, you know, make it through the storm and still, you know, have the season that we had, you know, through all of that, you know, and, it just made my decision, and you know, the decision to come here, it just making me feel so much better that, you know, just how the teammates I get to play with. I mean, you know, you saw the guys that got nominated, Gino and Vern and Standback and all our defensive players. And, you know, we go against each other in practice, and, you know, and we all push each other on. I'm just so, you know, happy to be a part of a team like this, man. It's, you know, a turnaround happened quicker than, you know, anyone could expect it.
For sure. Cliff.
All right. Well, Devere, let's take things back a little bit. You came from the Ohio State University. Talk to us about that experience and how do you think that shaped you as a football player playing in that system and then eventually making your way to the NFL and the CFL?
I'm in Ohio State. It's a place where you go and either you're okay with playing in those lights and you're okay with playing in front of those people, or, you know, you become a guy who goes to Ohio State and just graduates. But for me, you know, I always, you know, embrace those moments, those big opportunities, you know, those times to be competitive, you know, no matter what stage it's on, and just being at Ohio State and just understanding, you know, how important it is to be sharp in November. Coach Tressel would always say, you know, October is for pretenders and November is for contenders. And just, you know, every year around this time, you know, you just see, you know, different things happen with teams. And at Ohio State, we just learn to kind of just stay focused, you know, stay on your routine, different things like that. And it's, I owe everything to Ohio State, man. That place is an amazing alma mater to say I'm from. And I always, you know, get excited to go back.
So talk to us about the Horseshoe.
The Horseshoe is an exciting place, man. It's I haven't played in many stadiums like it. It's almost kind of crazy just to think that, you know, I played in all of those games in the Horseshoe, and I'll never ever get to play in there again, like ever. Like, I'll never be able to put on a uniform and play in a meaningful game again. And that kind of like just brings things into perspective. You understand how special your time was. You understand how special this game was, or this kickoff return, or when the crowd did this, or they screamed this, you know. And it's just, you know, it makes those moments solidified in your past. And you know, the Horseshoe is a great place to play football, man.
So if you ever get a chance to go there, Tim and I, and we just happen to, you know, drop Devere Posey's name, are we going to get all the love, or people are just going to be hating on us, or?
Nah, man, I think you'll be good, man. I think you'll be good around there, those parts. If you go there or go south of Columbus, you'll be okay with dropping Posey.
Man, if I would know, I was actually in near Ohio State. I was in Columbus earlier in June this year. If I would have known that, I would have dropped your name like a hat.
Oh, you went to a Blue Jacket game?
No, I was there for an Arena League game.
Oh, I got you. Yeah.
Okay. Talk about your football and your career itself. I mean, it's when you got started as a kid. I mean, was it something that you went into naturally, or was it? Something that some players they are pushed or prodded or by their parents or a coach, but what made you get you into football as a kid?
Man, I come from a football family. My family, my grandmother loved football. My uncle played at Michigan. I had a cousin who played at Miami of Ohio. My brother played at Ohio University. I grew up, you know, unfortunately, knowing the Michigan fight song because of my uncle and everybody in my family. And I had cousins who played. And I remember the first time I ever got to see the game, my mom asked me to come if we wanted to go. It was a park around the corner from our house. And we kind of went over and my cousin was playing. And I was just, you know, the barbecue smell from the Little League. Like I just remember like the pickles and the sunflower seeds and just the cheerleaders, just the Saturday mornings in Little League football that made me just love football. And I was like the youngest of four, so I would always be up there. I always had the first game of the day at 7:30, and then my brother played around mid-morning, and then my sister was a cheerleader for the older team. So after our games, we would just stay up there and play football all day. And just, I had a youth where, like, it was my game. And you know, I played basketball and I ran track in high school and, you know, and had opportunities to go to college from there. But ever since a kid, man, I always loved the game. It always came kind of naturally easy, the physical part, you know, the toughness through injury, you know, just playing the game, being out in the cold, you know, growing up in Ohio, playing in the snow. I've done it all when it comes to football. And me and my brother played in the CFL for a while and NFL too. So me and football have a great relationship. It's the one thing I know, you know, better than anything. I started the year before kindergarten. So technically, I started football before I started going to school.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, it's crazy.
So you talk about a football life. That is a football life kidding. Right there.
No kidding.
Yes.
Did anybody, any particular coach or any coach or player that you looked up for, or a family member that you looked up in particular when it comes to football that really got you in the right mindset, saying, you know what, I love football. This is the reason why.
I just guess like my uncles, you know, and just always knowing that I had a family member that played in the NFL. And also just like my brother, and just always having somebody that was kind of older than me and just his awareness of like defensive players and stuff like that. And I would honestly say my two football heroes are, this might throw you off a little bit. My two football heroes are, Brian Dawkins.
Okay.
Donovan McMahon and, Chad Johnson. So those guys to me, and they all play an integral part of my like youth. Like Donovan McNabb was a quarterback for the Eagles when I got my first starter jacket. And so I used to wear number 5 because of Donovan McNabb.
Okay.
And it's the reason why I wear number 5 today. And it's my wife's favorite number. But I grew up, I was a big Donovan McNabb fan. Brian Dawkins, like just watching him come out and just like, who he became, like he loved X-Men. Like I used to love X-Men growing up, big X-Men fan. Like one of my kindergarten friends, his dad named all his children after X-Men, and his dog's name is even Beast. So like me and Brian Dawkins had like kindred spirits. We had a connection there. So I always loved Brian Dawkins, and I don't know if you ever saw me on the sideline. I love to play with a similar passion and just will for the game and just calling upon, you know, just spirit inside of you that only the game they can bring out.
Right.
You know, so growing up, you know, I used to love Brian Dawkins and Chad Johnson. When I started playing receiver in high school, I grew up in Cincinnati, Ohio. Chad Johnson was at the height of his game at that time. And just being able to see him, you know, every Sunday in the Cincinnati Bengals number 85 uniform, it was the reason why I wore 85 when I was in Toronto and when I was in high school. So I love Chad Johnson, and I know he's a former Montreal Alouette,
yep.
But, you know, I don't know if he remembers, but he brought me my U.S. Army All-American jersey my senior year and kind of came, and I got to meet him in person. So I'm forever indebted for that. But that was a dream of mine. But those are who kind of, like, shaped my football mind and my football mindset. And on top of everybody is my mom. You know, that's my number one cheerleader. She's my biggest fan. She loves the game, and she always made sure she dropped us off, had all the right equipment and things like that. So those are the people kind of shaped my football youth.
That's nice. Isn't it? Why'd you think it would throw us for a loop there, Devere?
I didn't think that I would just like a wide receiver or something like Randy Moss or something. I like a quarterback or a safety and a wide receiver.
Oh,
like
no, it's
favorite all time players.
Oh no, I get it. I mean, it's the ones that stand out to you the most. I mean, honest, it didn't surprise me at all. I mean, as I said, players, I'm sure that of all the players that we spoke to, Devere, they all have their favorites and may not be a wide receiver and maybe a coach. And maybe, so it's, you know, it's really cool to see that, as you said, there are three, not just one, but there are three, including your mom that you look up to.
Yeah.
So it's really cool to see. Cliff.
All right. Well, talk to us now about coming up to Canada. After you've bounced around a couple of teams in the NFL, you decide to come up north and see how the other half live. Talk to us about your experience with the Toronto Argonauts. Obviously, you came in, you had Mark Trestman as your coach. You had a lot of former Alouettes on the team as well. And you managed to parlay that into a Grey Cup championship. So talk to us about your first impressions coming up to play in the CFL and how it compared to your time in the NFL.
Oh, man. I kind of stumbled up here after, felt like I was kind of like going through a barren football desert. You know, I had been cut from, you know, a few NFL teams. I was kind of on the outskirts. You know, bigger names that came in the NFL and played at a younger age. So I kind of felt like, you know, my time was kind of fading down south. And my brother was playing in Winnipeg. It was his first year. I was able to go to Toronto. I got cut from the Jets in 2015, and me and my wife drove to Toronto first time in Canada. And we were able to see him play. It was the last game played in the Rogers Center. And I kind of saw the game. I was like, man, you can get a running start and you can play with all this space and all this room. I was like, I know I can ball up here. I know I can play, but I want to give the NFL another shot. So I signed in Denver 2016, and I kind of knew in the back of my head if I got cut again, I wasn't going to sit at home. I was going to go up there. As soon as I got cut, I asked my brother if I could come to Winnipeg and play with him, but found out Toronto had my rights. So once I found out Toronto had my rights, I had to negotiate with Spencer Zimmerman and Jim Barker. First people I ever spoke with as far as coming up here, Jim Barker told me over the phone, he said, I'll never forget it. He told me that I'll love football again if I come up there. He told me that the Argos were going to move downtown and they were going to be a household name in the city of Toronto. They're bringing them back. You know, they're resurging. And the time the Argos were really bad, things weren't going well in 2016. And kind of got up. You know, I kind of believe it. I hung up the phone. I sat on the offer for like 2 weeks. He called me with like 9 games left, and I agreed to come up with 7 games left. So I went to Toronto, didn't bring a big bag. I didn't know if I was going to stay or not. The first person I meet is Matt Black and Sean Lemon, and, you know, and kind of, you know, me and Winston Rose, the DB from Winnipeg, we're on the same plane. We get there. It's hard. It's tough. I want to go home after a couple of weeks, guys. You know, I tell Barker straight up, you know, I'm ready to go home. You know, I don't know if this is for me anymore, you know. And kind of had hit a wall when it came to football. I'd been working so hard, and I was kind of like exhausted. I had a talk with Ricky Ray. And Ricky Ray, I didn't know who he was, you guys. Like, this guy was hurt. He looked like an old man. I thought he was a trainer on the team. And, like, I just, think you guys got to think how Americans think coming up here for the NFL. I was a draft pick. You know, I'm like, man, who is this guy? And we're tossing. He's like, yeah, I played up here for so many years, this and that, and I've won this many championships. And don't get me wrong, it's not like Ricky's boasting. I had to pull this out of Ricky. And so he was like, I'm thinking about playing. And I'm like, all right. So, like, during that time, I'm on scout team. So Ricky's coming off a 6 game. Ricky's throwing the ball to me in scout team. So he's like, we're going, like, I think I was like 20-0 in one-on-ones. So during that time, like, you know, scout team players do one-on-ones after practice. But I got lucky my first time. That was my quarterback. I had no idea who he was. He agrees to come back and play. I'm playing my first couple games in the CFL. I'm playing with Deontay Spencer, Brandon Whitaker, and guys like that. And you know, and I get knocked out. You know, Glenn Love knocks me out. And it's kind of funny that I got knocked out by Glenn Love, because I didn't know if I loved football anymore at that time. But ever since he knocked me out, I've been playing the game with way more passion. I realized how much I loved it. And, you know, the rest is history. You know, we came back the next year, Toronto happened, you know, things happened in 2017, and it was, you know, sort of, you know, things have gone that way, but that's sort of how my career got started up here. And I actually returned kicks too. I have some returns, some stats where I had to get on the field in the CFL. I had to play special teams. So I did punt return. And I was an anti-gunner, and then I earned my way to be a returner. And then I was on kickoff return too. So I paid my special teams dues up here too as well.
Yeah. Well, that work you did with Ricky Ray obviously paid off in spades in November 2017. Talk to us about the play that, as far as I'm concerned, more or less helped you guys seal that Grey Cup championship, and also too set a record for the most the longest play in Grey Cup history. You want to break that down for us?
Yeah. Oh man, it's actually like everything in my life, you know, I fall before I get up and run 90 yards, and, you know, beat one of the best CFL, you know, corners in the league that year. But it was just, you know, backed up, you know, Tress called a double move, and we needed a play, and I kind of got off the turf. So I think I kind of caught Tommy off guard there. And then after that, just made a play, man. I've talked about this play so many times in the past, and it's something that, you don't realize. The only thing I remember from the play is just catching the ball, breathing hard, and just, being cold as hell running down the sideline. But that's professional football. That's doing the thing. That's being sharp. That's doing everything you're supposed to do every single play. And I'm just happy I didn't, give up on the play, and leave Ricky hanging there. And, and I'm forever in debt, in debt for that play. It's a play that I'll never forget. And hopefully, a lot of Canadians never forget that too either. And hopefully I can give some more memories like that.
Well, I'll tell you what, funny thing about it, and you'll appreciate this too, Tim. Devere, you were in that stadium. Tommy Campbell was in that stadium, as you said. You kind of blew him up a little bit. Tim and I were both in the stadium as media.
Yeah.
I mean, the fact that all this, and now we're all, in a way, in a more abstract way, we're all part of this thing here in Montreal. I mean, it's crazy how football can sort of bring people together, and you don't even realize it at the time, but now look where things are right now. Like, just the fact that this Alouettes team is ready to go into a playoff game, and we're going to be a part of it, at least in the stands anyways, and then you and Tommy are going to be on the same team with the same goal in mind.
Yeah, man, that was he doesn't know, but, like, him being here, playing against Henoch Mwambo, and, that same year when he was in Saskatchewan, I knew what type of player he was. I played against Patrick Levels, and, everybody knows who John Bowman is. And, those guys, were a big factor in the reason why I wanted to come here, because I knew this team, this defense, could be really special. And they played extremely well and all year, and cheering them on. And, I know a lot of people talk about our offense and, the cardiac kids or whatever, but, man, we got a cardiac defense, and they have a pulse that never dies, and they get better as the game goes on, and they feed off of us and we feed off of them. And, guys like Tommy and Henoch, man, they make it so much more easier on our side of the ball.
It's funny, Cliff, you look at Devere's, his history in football and all the people that he's dealt with. It's funny, if we were to play a game of 6 degrees of Devere Posey, I think it'd work quite well, because considering everybody, I mean, Jed Johnson, when he gave me your jersey and he happened to play in Montreal. I mean, it's like all the roads lead to Devere Posey. What's going on here?
It's incredible.
I know.
I have no idea.
I'm
trying to make it, man.
Yeah, if you think about it too, Devere, with the record that you set, your name is immortalized not only on the Grey Cup, but also in the CFL record book, because if somebody happens to break it, your name's going to be listed in the record book with that record for basically for all time.
Man, I hope somebody doesn't get a penalty on the 5-yard line and get backed up and do a 1-on-1 yard. So I hope next time somebody plays in the Grey Cup, it's no penalties. It's all clean football.
Yeah.
that's all we can ask for.
Exactly. So you've been obviously with being with other teams, you've played in Montreal before, but obviously now being a part of the Alouettes, it is a little bit different. How different is it being a player who plays for Montreal versus a player who just comes in for 1 or 2 days, plays here, and then goes back home?
This place is a place that's a fun city. Everybody knows the nightlife of Montreal, and I always like to say, I'd like to joke that, it's a trap city for teams. We say, there's certain trap cities on the NBA, NHL, NFL, probably NHL and baseball, because they probably do longer road trips.
Right.
But those trap cities where you can go on any night of the week, you can go and have a good time. That's Montreal. So for us to have that awareness and to have that understanding, and for us to kind of police each other and kind of make sure we're watching each other this season, I think we've done a fairly good job as a team, keeping our name out of the streets, not having any, things in the clubs or, any bad news about our team. And I think, to date, that
we've been fairly lucky with that, you know, with the group of guys we have.
Right.
You know, we have guys getting us from Bible study, you know, going out to dinner. So that's one thing for a player, you know, just to be aware and be cautious of so that you can have success. And then once you, you know, once you can navigate through that, navigate through the city, navigate through the French, and then there's this overwhelming support, this overwhelming, what do I say, group of, I guess it's like a collective consciousness of people here in Montreal who love football and who love winning.
Right.
And to appease that collective consciousness with wins and with a great season, it's something that I'm experiencing for the first time, and something that guys who have been here for 4 years are experiencing for the first time. People like Bowman and Christian Mann and LBJ, they know what it's like. Our supporting staff, our equipment managers, our training room staff, those guys know what it's like to win here. So for them to be excited again, you know, and to see the city, you know, to go to the Habs game and just to have the overwhelming love and just, you know, walk around town, and for people to be excited about the Alouettes again. For me, I honestly believe, you know, that was one of the reasons why I wanted to come here, was because of that chance, because of the opportunity to experience this town winning. You know, I spoke with Tressman like a few days after, you know, I agreed to sign here, and I asked myself, can you win in Montreal again? Is there, like, how do you do it? I'm not saying this as if, like, you know, I'm a member of a team, but I just wanted to know what it was like up here, because
right.
I had never been to Montreal. I only played here once. So, and I asked SJ Green and, you know, what it was like to win here, and just the things that they told me and how they did things back then. And you get that same kind of feeling, and I feel like people are starting to feel that same feeling again, and they're trying to, you know, it's a good feeling to have it back in town, you know, Alouettes winning, I guess. How do you guys think?
Well, it's very different. And I was going to ask you, because we asked this from a few players, you know, after the Calgary game, that infamous Firefly incident, you know, with all the lights on when everybody turned on their lights for their cell phones. That is something totally new to Montreal. We've never seen that in years here that I could even think of. And for that just to start, I think that just shows how different of a not only a team, but how different the fans are just this year, because it's special. It really is. I mean, DeVere, I've had season tickets for 23 years. This is something special, something I've never seen before as a season ticket holder, and it's great to see.
Yeah, and the energy that from the crowd, and you guys, I can see you guys feeding off of it.
Yeah.
Like, and I've never once, like, as far as 2019 alone, like, just the way that the fans have not given up on this team. Like, mm-hmm. even though I think back to the Winnipeg game, like, you guys were down by like 23 points. Like, that was the biggest comeback in Alouette's history, and you guys came all the way back and won that game. The Calgary game as well. Like, I mean, just the energy from that. Like, just the fact that like this team just does not give up, and the fans feed off of that. They get you guys hyped, and I can see it too. Like, I see you guys on the sidelines. Like, you guys are just feeding off that energy as well, and it's like nothing. It's been a long time, let's put it that way, that since we've seen something like that here in Montreal. And I can only imagine what it must be like for you guys as you're watching us in the crowd going crazy. And like, how do you not get hyped up for that?
It's honestly, you do. I mean, and it's the best part about playing in Percival Molson, man, is the energy in the crowd. It's, you know, it's a sexy crowd. I don't know how else to say it, man. I don't know if it's the language, the French language. I don't know what it is, man, but the crowd is energetic. And I guess the thing that I enjoy is the wisdom of the crowd. The oohs, the ahs, the boos are like things that, like, I'm in tune with. A pass interference that was missed, offside that wasn't called.
Yeah.
You know, you guys feel the way we feel. You know, the Quebec people see the game. They see the real game. You know, they're not watching, you know, they're not waiting for touchdowns and just goals. No, they're watching the game and seeing how things are developing. And I know that I found that I haven't played anywhere in the CFL where people call like that, or where people understand the game that much. You know, the fans in Toronto, They're a different type of crowd. They're not as in touch. It's not as small-minded. And just the history of football in Quebec,
just makes this place a football rich history place, and you feel it.
Devere, we greatly appreciate your time, man. We know you have a family to attend to, but we wish you all the best of luck this Sunday. And if anybody wants to happen to follow you on social media, Devere, how would they do so?
Yes, you can follow me at Twitter at Depot8, and you can follow me on Instagram at Deposey, P-O-S-E-Y _.
And again, we want to thank Devere for joining us. I love talking to the players, Cliff, because we learn so much about them. Obviously, besides what we ask them when it comes to the nightlife or the life here in Montreal. But it just seems that so much has been a huge influence on his football career. And by the way, I wasn't joking. If you think about it, you could start a game with them, I swear. 6 degrees of Devere Posey. So many players he's played with, people he's met. You could easily, anybody, I'm sure you could pick a player and the game would work out perfectly for him.
Yeah, I think that'll have to be one of our goals during the offseason is to do a show, and it'll just be strictly 6 degrees of Devere Posey. But we definitely appreciate him coming on, chatting with us. Like I said, he covered a lot as far as his the love that he has for football, and it started at such a young age, and to see where it's brought him now, and the fact that he's so excited to be a part of things here in Montreal is just awesome. Like, that's what you want, is you want people that want to be here, that want to be a part of something special. And Devere is definitely that. And we can't thank him enough for joining us. And as always, he's definitely welcome back on the flight deck anytime he wants.
Exactly. Yeah, well, again, Cliff, actually, I don't know. Where are you sitting, dude, for the game this week?
In Y1, like always.
There you go. I had to find out. I wasn't going to assume a damn thing, man. Because, you know, someone was like, where were you this week, Tim? Oh, well, you know, I upgraded my seats. You know, that's... But yeah, I'll be with the regular crew this week, so...
That's it. And that, again, I can't be more excited about it, Tim. I mean, we're... Again, this is our house. And this is their nest. This is the Alouettes' nest. They've got to defend this nest. And I'm so excited at the prospect of this game because... Again, the idea that this team was going to be in playoff contention seemed laughable when we got underway. When training camp started, everybody and their mother was predicting this was going to be another dumpster fire, another rebuilding year, and so on and so forth. And then, like, you think about it, like, go remember back during training camp, we saw what was going on with Mike Sherman as the head coach and Kavis Reed here as general manager, and just the evolution of this team. To see Kahari Jones take over the team 6 days before the regular season starts.
Yeah.
And look at the job he has done. It is phenomenal. You look at the players that have stepped up and become household names in the city. Vernon Adams, who is fourth on the depth chart, who was practically an afterthought, has now emerged and was in contention for MOP. He was listed as one of the nine all. Tim, this team has 9 all-stars on it for 2019.
I know.
Can you believe it?
I know, and that's the one thing that we want before we leave. We wanted to make sure that we at least mentioned them, who and they're obviously, because they had such great seasons, that we want to at least mention them. You have the list in front of you?
I certainly do. As I said, right off the top, Big Play VA. Is one of the all-stars for the Eastern Division, I should say.
Right.
Let's see. Next on the list is William Standback, who is, again, had a phenomenal season, breaking out like he has. Eugene Lewis, one of the top-notch receivers. He's also now can officially say he's an all-star. The one that was pleasantly surprised about, Christian Matt, as starting center for this all-star team.
Yeah.
That's fantastic. Again, this speaks to the work that he has done, and he has really truly evolved into a great center, which, again, a couple of years ago I was just not sure that he was going to be able to be up to the task for it, but man, he has grown by leaps and bounds and has just been absolutely outstanding. So I'm so proud of the work that he's done on the defensive side of things, and this is where it gets really fun. You've got John Bowman, who we always expect to be great, and once again another all-star nod for him,
and very fitting with his last season too,
without question. Henock Mwamba, you already know just how phenomenal a player he is. I mean, so this is not a surprise. This shouldn't be a surprise to anybody. Patrick Levels, Tommy Campbell, and Greg Reed making up the rest of the defense for these all-star nods. Like, look at these players, man. Like, you've got 9 absolutely phenomenal players representing the Eastern Division for the CFL. I mean, that, again, at the start of the season, who would have imagined that we'd have any All-Stars just based on all the negative talk and everything that was swirling around this team? But that's all in the past, Tim. Like, this is – this again, I go back to what Kahari said after that incredible win against the Winnipeg Blue Bombers. This group is real.
Yeah.
Like, this is a real bona fide superstar football team. And, man, we're not done yet. That's the beautiful part is there's still more football to be played. And, it's exciting, folks. It is really exciting to be able to say that the Montreal Alouettes are a playoff football team. And come Sunday, I mean, win or lose, this is going to be a season to remember. But I don't think this season is over yet. Not by a long shot.
Hey, fingers crossed, man. Fingers crossed. Congratulations to all the Alouettes who were nominated for an East All-Star. We hope that quite a few of you end up becoming the full CFL All-Star, which will be announced in December. I think they said December, if I'm not mistaken. And also, you know what? We're still – they don't mention who the finalists are for the head coach of the year, but fingers crossed for Kahari, man. Fingers crossed.
Well, I'll tell you what, I mean, just and this is no disrespect to the other coaches that are out there, but I mean, to see what Kahari has done in his first crack at being a head coach in the Canadian Football League, to see the work that he's put through and see how the players have bought in and they believe in Kahari. Like, they will run through a brick wall for this guy. Hell, I will run through a brick wall for Kahari Jones if he asks me to. Like, that's what he does. That's the energy he brings, this, the passion, the fun. Like, he has made this football team in his own image. Like, it's just so much fun. There's just no other way to describe how amazing this turnaround has been for Alouettes fans. And it's all going to come to a head starting on this Sunday. And quite frankly, I just don't see it ending anytime soon. But man, like, what a ride this has been. It has been absolutely incredible. And I'm so happy that we've been able to talk about it all season long. It hasn't been perfect by any stretch of the imagination. I mean, 10-8 means, yeah, there's been some tough losses to have to talk about. But to see what this team has become from training camp in late May, early June, to where we are here in November, what a ride. Yeah. What a ride, Tim. Like, this has been absolutely incredible. And I'm so glad that things have worked out the way they have. And to see this kind of success from this team, for its players, for everybody that's associated with the Montreal Alouettes, this has been such a cool experience. And again, I just wanted to keep going. I don't think I truly believe that this isn't over yet. This season is not going to end on Sunday. I really believe that. I really hope that's the case, because I'm really excited to see where things go from this point on.
Oh, me too. Me too. And again, don't forget the game. If you haven't gotten your tickets, make sure you do so. Weather, so what? It's you know what? It's November playoff football in the CFL. So bundle up, have some fun, and okay, come by Y1 and say hi to Cliff and I if you dare do so. Ha ha ha. That's for last. Kind of. Whatever. Cliff, I will see you there. We hope to see you here next week as we talk about the what happened in the East semifinal. So for everybody here at the Alouettes Flight Deck, for Cliffy D, I'm Tim Capper. We're on Final Approach.
Thanks for listening. Find more great shows like this at CF Pod Network on Twitter.